News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR. Good morning. It is Colin Letty across the console. Good morning, Colin.
Good morning.
We also have with us Matt Rinker. He is across the console, or actually in another studio at this time.
Good morning.
Good morning to you. And Robert Kreitzer also joining us today. Robert, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
It is City Council Day today. We're talking about issues in front of the City Council and issues that basically are facing the city. I think the soft openings hopefully will be getting. I guess the question is, when are we going to get a harder opening?
Well, City Hall is going to be opening up here pretty quick, and the courthouse just opened. So I think what we'll see is we'll start to see a loosening of some of the restrictions that we had during the COVID event here over the next couple of weeks, and we should be back to somewhat normal operation here by the end of the month.
Closer to normal, at least.
Yeah. And you know what? This is something that's constantly, it could change. We could have to institute some of the restrictions depending on what happens. So we'll see how things play out over the next several months.
I guess from a council standpoint or from a city standpoint, obviously getting back to quote-unquote normal, and that is people staying at hotels, and I think there was a tournament, if I'm right, there was a tournament over the weekend at the Recplex, was there not?
You know, I don't know about the Recplex.
I know there was
a couple in other communities, because I have a friend who's associated with some of those. So I know those are things that are getting back to normal.
Yeah, I think they had a softball. I think they had a softball tournament.
And there's a Little League thing coming up this weekend.
Yeah. So those things, that bids or bodes well for hotels. Hotel motel tax obviously has taken a hit.
And local option sales tax.
Yes, obviously local option sales tax. But as I said, the quicker we get back to whatever normal or close to normal, I know that if you're running a home improvement store, you've got my next door neighbor is one of the managers out at Menards. He says it's Black Friday every day out there, and I'm guessing the same at any other place. But same thing with the garden center. People want to be doing stuff. They want to be out and about, I think, getting. And I know that stores are gradually opening, and the soft opening is getting closer to being a more fixturable, or I guess more of a thing. And people are actually going out to eat. But, again, social distancing or whatever we want to call it, or careful distancing. I'm not even sure whether social distancing is the right term or not anymore, but distancing.
Well, we have a less dense population in Burlington in this area, so we're actually doing a little better than some of the more densely populated areas. We did have a doctor come in on Monday and kind of give us the COVID speech, so to speak. He just told us that, you know, the social distancing is helping. He said the mask, you know, that's obviously to protect other people, not you. And he said, and every little thing we do is just going to help us get over the hill, so to speak. So we're doing pretty good in Burlington.
All right. Well, I guess the question is, from a city standpoint, how bad or how much damage has been done so far? I think you used a term called not really a depression, not really a recession. You said
suppression. Right. And it's a suppression, in my opinion, because it was intentional, and it was acted upon not just here locally, but throughout the entire country, essentially. So when the government shut down the economy, and we saw the regression the way we saw it, I consider that to be more of a suppression than a recession. For me, a recession or expansion, those are things that happen naturally. So the suppression, I think, is being somewhat released. Most states have opened up to some degree, if not all the way. So we'll see how things go here over the next several quarters.
Yeah, I see Las Vegas is opening up.
Yeah,
I saw that.
The impact to the city, I don't know that we're going to have a great, a very accurate number here for several months. Just because a lot of the reporting that comes to us one or two quarters down the road. So it may be, I'd say earliest is probably August when we start to get some of those numbers, but it could be as late as next year. I do know the state issued a statement and said that they would uphold their local option sales tax payments to communities based off of the their modeling or estimating this year, but then next year they will adjust for what has actually happened. So that's when we'll really need to sit down and figure out, okay, exactly what are we going? We've already taken steps as a city. We've cut out all non-essential purchasing that wasn't already in the process of taking place. We've eliminated a couple of projects and kind of tightened our belt. So Jim's estimate right now is anywhere from $500,000 to $700,000.
Yeah.
But we really won't know what effect it'll have on the bottom line until we get a lot of these projects done and figure out, okay, for example, we had a project that we just bid out a couple of weeks ago that came in about 20% under budget. Well, those are dollars that can kind of go back into the pot to help relieve the stress on the budget.
When I had Jim Furno on, actually it was last month I had Jim Furno on, he was talking about from the standpoint of what will happen, where are the high impact areas. He said, hotel motel tax, obviously. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the sales tax revenues, but he said the other thing is that the flood mitigation project, the funding for that is also going to be directly linked to that, and that's going to be a big hit.
Yeah, and the reason for that is because several years ago we set a baseline with the state for sales tax revenue. And there, any of the increment created would go to cover the cost of that. Well, when that baseline was set, we were actually experiencing an expansion here locally in sales tax revenue. And then when a lot of the people left in association with the fertilizer plant, we kind of saw a little bit of a retraction. So when we see that retraction back down to the baseline, we're not getting enough revenue to cover those expenses. So I know that we are working with the state to try and see if we can get that reset. I haven't gotten an update from Jim on where we are from that. I'll tell you, nothing moves fast. So it could be some time before that happens. But I know it's a conversation that we've had. And then hopefully we'll be able to see that expansion again. We did start to see one before everything happened here in the last quarter. So
well, if I'm right, just about every business, if I'm right, all virtually every business now is able to be opened, even with some restrictions. Is that your understanding?
I don't think
the hair salons are open.
Hair places are open. Churches, I don't know that places of worship are open yet, are they?
They are able to be open. Very few are taking advantage of it right now, simply because
they have their own rules. Some of them are really restricting. They're talking about letting a certain number of people in and then shutting the doors, so to speak. I'm not sure how it's going to work with the churches.
I think that a lot of churches, because particularly those the age group that we're talking about is also dealing with, a lot of it is in that prime category, I guess, of most vulnerable age group, and there is concern of that. So that will take a while before that is going to be.
So one of
again.
The things with this is everything is essentially locally implemented, but it's federally supported and then in state run. A lot of these programs are helping small businesses and things like that. So locally, when this started, my emphasis is what can we do as a city to support those businesses that are being affected by this. And now that we've kind of come out of that, we still want to do that, but now we have to also kind of do some housekeeping on our end to figure out what we need to do.
You talked about something
keep the city in a good position.
On your Monday event, it was a work session Monday, wasn't it? Is that right? When it was one of the things you talked about, the Dankwart Park pool. Well, the pools are still are not and perhaps will not be open this year. I'm not sure if there is. That pool particularly, but
they're open for swimming lessons and lap swim only.
Okay,
and we can't as a city, we have to look at revenue, and we don't have a significant amount of revenue on those two activities. It's primarily
right.
kids that want to come and cool off for the summer and things like that. So, and then in the process of doing some maintenance here with that pool, actually this year we found that the liner was pulling away. So now that we put a, that has put us in a position where we have some maintenance that we have to do before we even prepared to open it.
I don't think, but I'm wondering if I mean, as far as we know, there will be no change. I mean, I'm looking at the West Burlington pool. I'm looking at Fun City. Will that even be? Will
Most
that even
cities
be?
Have backed out of it altogether. I don't think Des Moines did, and we haven't committed to to one way or the other.
I can't speak for West Burlington because their pool is run by the YMCA, so they have a relationship there. I'm sure that those two organizations will determine what's best for them, and then I haven't seen anything on Fun City yet.
Yeah, and I think a lot has been basically in terms of the the common areas or the showers in that area, those are, I'm not sure if there's a challenge in terms of distancing there, or I'm not sure what the standard is for that. But, these are all things that we haven't been through before, so we really don't know where, when it changes, I guess, until somebody says change.
Right. We're a country of problem solvers, though, so if there's a solution to a problem, eventually one of us figures it out, and I'm confident in our ability to do those things. So if there's a way for us to open it up and use it safely, I think that we'll figure out a way to do
and,
it.
And there's no band concerts in the park through the summertime, not because they couldn't socially distance the audience, but because they have you've got a lot of risk at or high risk vulnerable people that would be performing and playing the instruments. So.
Right.
So that's one of the things. But I guess slowly, surely, I'm guessing, the other concern is will we see a second wave of this? And I think that really seems to be the...
Your guess is as good as mine.
It's the concern, but... will a vaccine be out, and will there be a very, very...
I know that we're not the only country struggling with it. Mexico saw a big increase in cases. Brazil had so many that they quit reporting, is what I heard on the radio. So, it's a worldwide problem. So I would hope that with everybody together that we can figure something out. But maybe it'll just eventually die off, too, and we won't have to. I'm hoping there won't be a second round of it. But that's just optimism there.
Yeah, I guess.
I think so. Some information that we got Monday from the physician, Dr. Mike McCoy at Great River Medical Center. He's the lead physician out there. He came and was kind enough to kind of give us an update as to some of the things that they've done to prepare. And then also kind of tell us a little bit about pandemics. And, They are working. There are a number of entities nationally and worldwide working on a vaccination. I've heard estimates from anything from testing for vaccination as early as this fall, with something being mass produced as early as next year, early parts of next year. If that would be the case, that would be great. But I think what we're going to see, and Dr. McCoy alluded to this in Monday's meeting. So 60% of the population would need to contract the disease and have the antibodies in order to have some type of population immunity. And population immunity is essentially this. It's where enough people have the antibodies that when they come in contact with the disease that they don't spread it to somebody else. But he also said that one of the things, and they're still learning a lot about this particular strain of the virus, is that they don't know how long these antibodies in a person are going to last, and they don't know to what level they provide a way to for the body to combat the virus. So is it a strong antibody or is it not? Does it last the rest of your life or is it something where it might only last a couple of weeks? Those are all things that they're still researching. So there's just not a lot of information to be able to figure out what route's probably going to take place. I'm on a conference call every week, every Wednesday afternoon. I've got one this afternoon. We get updates on where places are and what's going on. There's a lot of partnerships taking place around the world. There's a lot of labs in the northeast of the U.S. and in Britain working together and trying to figure out how what they can do to come up with this vaccination. So
a lot, and in fact, I know that's I think Moderna is they're moving and they're in phase two of testing right now. They've already done their phase one testing, and they're moving into phase two testing. And I guess what it all depends on. The other thing that we've heard is that if adequate or if there is a very significant improvement in treatment
mm-hmm.
and the ability to screen, and I think a very quick screening method, that would change
yep.
the...
And we have so locally, we have the drive-through testing out at the community college that is being conducted by the hospital. And we have access to rapid tests. However, a majority of those rapid tests are being kept because we don't have a lot of them. Mm-hmm. They are being kept for patients, that they need to know the answer right away. So, for example, perhaps a mother who comes in, and needs to deliver a child. They need to know if that mother has COVID-19 right now. They don't have the 48 to 72
right.
hours to wait. So situations like that, they're holding those tests for that simply because of the limited quantity.
And I guess when we talk about, we look ahead. I know that Jamie Pollard at Iowa State says, well, we're planning on having 30,000 in Jack Trice Stadium. For the opener on September 5th, whereas Gary Barta from the University of Iowa said, well, we're planning on a full house of 72,000. So I'm thinking, I'm not sure what that means. I think there's a certain amount, obviously, they're looking at down there and maybe hoping for the best, but I think it's the idea, there's a certain amount of risk that, you're going to be taking, no matter what.
Says the University of Iowa and Iowa State, they're kind of just planning as if they're going to be able to do it the way that they've always done it until they can't plan to do that anymore. So I think what you'll probably see at some of the larger scale events like the national football and college football is there will be a standard put in place by a governing body. Like the NCAA or the
right.
state itself will say, listen, this is what we'll allow and this is what we won't.
Yeah.
Depending on what's going on, we probably won't see a lot of those rulings until August.
Yeah.
We're essentially 2 months. We're 88 days yesterday from college, from Iowa Hawkeye football, and I'm not counting or anything, but
okay.
we are 88 days.
Okay. 88
so,
days. Okay. All right.
So that being said, I think they'll probably wait to the last minute and then they'll figure out what they need to do to prioritize who gets to be able to attend and who doesn't. So.
And I think that it's very much uncertain about going to schools, how schools are going to be going back. And we get it's a little bit like we've said on the open phone sessions that if you ask 10 different people who are quote unquote experts, you'll get typically 10 different answers, and they can cover the entire spectrum. For instance, we had Pat Cohen talking about a very limited amount of people or kids or students in classrooms, but we had Dr. Michael Ash from SEC. He says, hey, we're planning on having regular classrooms as we would at any other time. Now, planning on and having it is, I guess, two different things.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break. It is City Council Day today. Matt Rinker, Robert Kreitzer joining. Matt are joining Colin Letty and yours truly, Steve Exum. We're going to be back, and we'll have more right after the news.
Welcome to the program.
This is the Dan Patrick Show.
Vic Fangio is the head coach of the Denver Broncos, and he had this to say.
I don't see racism at all in the NFL. I don't see discrimination in the NFL.
He does know where the NFL was trying to incentivize teams to bring in African-American coaches, and you would get a better draft pick. There is racism.
Dan Patrick. The Dan Patrick Show.
Weekday mornings 8 to 11 on Fox Sports 104.5 and 1360. No matter what's going on with the temperature outside, you're going to be fiddling with the temperature inside. And that means messing around with the thermostat. Summertime, you'll need to cool off with some air conditioning. Winter, you're going to need to warm up with some heating. Spring and autumn, it just really depends on the day. But what happens when the temperature doesn't respond like it's supposed to? Maybe the air conditioner goes on the fritz, or the heater just stops. Make sure no matter what's going on outside, you're fine inside. Hi, I'm Bob Jern from Jern's Heating and Air Conditioning. The temperature outside may be unpredictable, but with an Amana high-efficiency furnace and air conditioner, the temperature inside will stay just where you want it. For comfortable and consistent temperatures in your home all year round, call Jern's Heating and Air Conditioning, your Amana dealer. Serving Southeast Iowa and West Central Illinois. With 24-hour service and never an overtime charge.
How much money would you like to save just by doing something you're already doing? How about 40%? With Allstate, safe drivers can save 40% just by doing something they're already doing. Driving safe. That's right, 40% just by driving safe. Visit Allstate.com or call a local agent for a quote today and see just how much you can save when you drive safe with Allstate.
Not available in every state. Savings vary and based on DriveWise and other safe driving discounts. Subject to terms, conditions, and availability. Allstate Fire and Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates, Northbrook, Illinois.
This is you getting snacks from the pantry. Meh. This is you getting snacks from the DQ 2 for $4 Super Snack Menu.
Wow!
And mixing and matching any two snacks, like the new lemonade Twisty Misty with a chili dog.
Uh-huh!
A cheeseburger with fries.
What?
Or even pretzel sticks with a sundae. The DQ 2 for $4 Super Snack Menu. Two snacks, $4. Get your on. Look for drive-thru and takeout options at your DQ. DQ. Happy, tastes good.
News now. News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR.
News brought to you by Kelly O'Shea's Pub and Grill, featuring a full menu including seafood, steaks, chops, pub sandwiches, whole catfish, and appetizers, as well as nightly specials. Come play at Kelly O'Shea's.
And now the latest from the KBUR newsroom, I'm Colin Letty. At approximately 8:55 p.m. Tuesday, the Burlington Police and Fire Departments were called to a personal injury accident in the 2500 block of Summer Street. Officers and paramedics found one injured person who was transported to Great River Medical Center for treatment. The Iowa State Patrol Post 13 was asked to assist with the accident investigation. The names of the individuals involved are being withheld. The Iowa State Patrol is investigating the incident. The city of Coralville on Tuesday lifted its curfew it had imposed earlier this month in response to looting and vandalism. Coralville Mayor John Lundell said in a statement the curfew was effective in curbing violence. The Gazette reports Coralville announced the curfew on June 1st. The move came less than a day after the arrest of 9 Coralville residents, property damage, and looting. Iowa Republican legislators are fast-tracking a bill that offers businesses, including meatpacking plants and nursing homes, broad immunity from coronavirus lawsuits amid criticism that it would also enable them to ignore workplace safety requirements. A bill passed the Iowa House on Friday after a brief debate, and it awaits likely approval in the GOP-led Senate before moving to the Republican governor. Limiting liability for businesses has long been a priority of Republicans in many states, and the coronavirus pandemic has given them a reason to pursue aggressive action. Oklahoma, Utah, and Wyoming enacted similar laws, and several other states are considering them. The Iowa Department of Human Services has announced that the state of Iowa has received nearly $1 million in funding from the Federal Emergency Management Agency to offer free crisis counseling to any Iowan who has been affected in any way by the COVID-19 pandemic. The program, called COVID Recovery Iowa, is now available. Counseling will take place via virtual sessions, chat, or by phone call. People of all ages are invited to join groups online to find support and learn new strategies to cope with the effects of the pandemic in a variety of creative ways. For more information, visit COVIDRecoveryIowa.org. From the KBUR Newsroom, I'm Colin Letty.
Fox News, I'm Lillian Wu. A hearing on police accountability underway before a House committee 2 weeks after a death at the hands of police which galvanized a movement.
Our hearts ache for the loss of George Floyd and Eric Garner. They ache for Breonna Taylor, for Amadou Diallo, for Tamir Rice, for Laquan McDonald, for Freddie Gray, for Walter Scott.
House Judiciary Chair Jerry Nadler also insisting this is not an indictment of all police officers.
We must always remember that most law enforcement officers do their jobs with dignity, selfless, and honor.
A brother of George Floyd is among the dozen witnesses today. And the White House defending a tweet by President Trump regarding an injured 75-year-old protester in Buffalo, New York, saying it was the president's prerogative to raise questions about the incident. America's listening to Fox News.
The weather outside is beautiful, and that means it's patio season. It's time for sun, fun, and exceptional food and drinks, only at Kelly O'Shea's. Dine in for fresh summer delights or use their carryout and curbside pickup options available on Wednesday, Thursdays, and Fridays to keep you warm and happy during the days in. Check out their menu at Kelly O'Shea's Pub's Facebook page to see what's to offer. Not your average pub, not the average way. Come play at Kelly O'Shea's.
Weather now. News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR.
Mostly sunny this morning. Increasing clouds, though, with rain 60% likely, mainly after 2 p.m. today. And breezy, high to 71. We'll see southwest winds 15 to 20, becoming northwest in the afternoon, gusting to 30. Cloudy early, then gradual clearing tonight. Low down to 56, continued breezy. A sunny Thursday with a high around 80. Mostly clear Thursday night, down to 60. Sunny Friday, up to 84. And sunny Saturday, a high of 77. Right now, we've got still mostly sunny skies, still 66.
I'm Jessica Ettinger, CNBC. Stocks are in the green at the open on Wall Street this morning after mixed markets yesterday. The Nasdaq yesterday hit an intraday record high. Investors today are waiting to hear what Fed Chair Jay Powell has to say about the economy later this afternoon after day two of the Fed meeting wraps up. Starbucks says it's lost $3 billion in revenue in the latest quarter, blaming the coronavirus pandemic. As the U.S. nears 2 million COVID-19 cases, Texas, one of the first states to loosen restrictions, saw its second straight day of record hospitalizations as the outbreak spreads. Best Buy says it'll allow a limited number of customers inside most of its stores starting next Monday, no appointment needed. And Best Buy's called back 9,000 furloughed workers. Jessica Ettinger, CNBC.
I've always wanted to learn another language, but every time I try, it never sticks. So I decided to give Babbel a try, and I really like the teaching method of the app. I started with the beginner lesson on Babbel, and it starts with simple words and phrases, and soon you're putting those words into a conversation. Each lesson takes about 10 to 15 minutes, and they're all really different, which keeps things interesting. The app is really smart. It actually keeps track of the words I'm struggling with so I can practice them and get better. I chose Babbel because it was created by real language teachers. They built it around real life, how people actually communicate, and what they care about. I can't wait to use my new language skills in the real world. Dos cervezas, por favor.
With Babbel, get conversational in Spanish, French, German, and more. It just takes 10 to 15 minutes a day. Now try Babbel free. Just go to Babbel.com or download the Babbel app and start learning a new language today. That's Babbel.com, B-A-B-B-E-L.com.
The Chad Benson Show.
That's right. 70% of Americans fear they will lose their job in 6 months. What does that do? That gets in your head. How does that affect you? It's the trickle-down effect. You don't go outside and spend money because your fear is this is going to go away. Your fear is you're not going to have the money you need.
The Chad Benson Show.
Chad Benson. Weeknights from 8 to 11 on News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR.
When there's a change in the weather,
it's horrible out here,
and you need to know.
I've never seen it like that.
Get fast, accurate weather information.
Your storm warning will remain
on air and online.
I always know it can be there.
News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR and online at KBUR.com.
Welcome back on the talk show today. City Council Day today. We've got two city council members. Matt Rinker is joining us, along Colin Letty across the council. Robert Kreitzer also with us today. We're talking about city business. Obviously, across the country and even in Burlington, demonstrations for the death of George Floyd that took place up in Minneapolis. And the... There seems to be a buzz nationwide about what, defending police departments? And I'm not sure why and how and disbanding. They're talking about disbanding the...
Defunding them.
And disbanding and taking responsibilities away from police officers and giving it to somebody else. I'm not sure exactly how they would do that or why the reaction is what it is. It seems to me to be somewhat of an extreme. I'm not sure where that logic is
well, initially sitting. What I thought defunding the police and like was like doing away with the police department, and I that's a terrible idea, because you need those people to protect the community to keep us safe. What I'm understanding now, because I researched it a little bit and I was panicking, like the thought of having no police at all just scared the life out of me, is that they're trying to change the structure of the organization and do more like foot patrols or bike routes or whatever, and take some of the services that police have been providing. Like, you know, they encounter people when they're having a bad day, whether it's a mental health issue,
right,
or they have a drug dependency program or problem. I don't know how they're going to do it, but I think what they're trying to do is just change the role of the police department, but defunding it and calling it that.
It has a sound that is concerning to an awful lot of people.
Right. It makes it sound like we're just giving up on them.
The city council in Minneapolis, they voted to disband
like 9 out of 12, right?
Yeah, 9 out of 12 disband the Minneapolis Police Department. Now I don't know whether that means disband the current one and then start from scratch again, but I'm not sure what.
Right. I think they did it in New Jersey once. They disbanded the whole police department, made them all, if they wanted to be hired again, they had to be hired back in and go through the application process all over.
But with that particular example, the purpose of that was to bring the costs of their officers down. So they disbanded the department because the average law enforcement officer made close to $200,000.
What?
By disbanding it, they were able to eliminate the unionization of the department and then rehire those officers back under non-union contracts at a lower rate.
So the Minneapolis thing is totally different?
Totally different.
Okay.
So you can't compare the two.
Okay, so the... disbanding and defunding are very, very basically they're two very different things is what you're saying. Is that right?
Absolutely. And I would just point out calls of service last year. I mean, we've continuously seen in my last 3 years on council a 10% increase annually in the number of calls for service to the Burlington Police Department. Now, that covers a vast array of things, everything from medical assists to thefts, to domestic disturbances, to violent crimes. It is nothing that this council, in my opinion, would ever or should ever consider.
No.
I don't want to get too far into the weeds in this because it's one of those things where we could talk about it until we're blue in the face and still not come up with anything. But nationally, my opinion is it's somewhat of a knee-jerk reaction to what has happened, the tragic incident that happened in Minneapolis. So I'll be curious to see what happens over the next couple of years with a lot of departments. I don't think there's anybody that can tell you that a law enforcement, a police force, is absolutely necessary to the stability of a community. So it will affect everything from crime rates to investment in that community to just public safety in general.
I don't think there's any. I think that in some of these larger cities, maybe in some of the larger cities, they need some reorganization. Maybe they need to rework.
I can't talk to that because I have no idea how.
I don't either. I don't know how they're organized.
I have no clue what it's like to serve on a large department like that. But I come from a law enforcement background. My father was in law enforcement. My brother is a federal agent in Texas. So, and I've worked closely with our law enforcement officers and law enforcement officers across the country. So, and not one of those people that I've worked with would I consider to be somebody that is a danger to the public. And in fact, I would say the exact opposite.
I know we've had Mike Johnstone on, and he's been very adamant about the fact that as a sheriff, he's been adamant about the fact that the amount of time and effort spent to dealing with mental health issues is draining.
Yep.
Is draining time and draining resources away from the department. I don't know.
Defunding law enforcement facilities
is talking about that here, right?
No,
might have been a poor choice of words on their part, like to describe that to the public. If that's what they're doing in Minneapolis, maybe they should tell people what they're doing instead of just using some fancy phrase. Not everybody's going to understand what it means. You're going to have a lot of reactions from people who misunderstand. I think when you're clear up front about what your intentions are and what it is that you want to do instead of using a catchphrase, I think that communication is key. And that's our job here, is to communicate and educate with the public and let them know what our intentions are on a local level. And that when they have questions, we answer. And we don't throw stuff out there like that that's just going to make people react to what we're saying. We're clear up front. So anybody that listens to our meetings knows that sometimes we'll cover the same material three times just so that people are clear on what our intent is and what we plan to do. And almost every meeting where we express that we're appreciative of our police force and that we think they're doing a wonderful job and that they're always here when we need them. They got with Tanisha when she had the protest, and they participated, and they were there, and they did it right in front of the police department, and they directed traffic, and everybody was peaceful, and that's exactly what we want. They understood that people are hurting, and they were there for us. So kudos to them for being part of that.
Well, and I think that we had the peace officers on with us last Thursday, and I think one of the things that was talked about is the fact that law enforcement, there's been an open war on law enforcement by and large, I'm not sure how, a fairly small group, but people, law officers have been ambushed in their cars. They've been shot at, there's no such thing as a routine traffic stop, because a routine traffic stop can turn deadly in a second. But I think that's the fact is the risk level, and also the fact that we have much fewer participation, and it's much harder to recruit law enforcement officers right now. And I think that's part of the issue that from a nationwide standpoint, I think that's really one of the issues, is that if you have very few people that are applying to be law enforcement officers, the level, at least at the bottom level there, is going to be perhaps compromised in terms of skill.
And that's not just law enforcement. I mean, that's public safety individuals as a whole. Fire departments are experiencing that across the country as well. I just think people's desire to serve in those roles has diminished. And to what you have alluded to, first off, the public respect for the role and the process isn't what it used to be. I think that is the most important thing as an American that we need to remember, is that we have processes established to handle every situation. Now, that doesn't mean that historically that's happened. I'm not blind to the fact that there are people that have done terrible things in authoritative roles and haven't been punished for them. But I think our society over the years has grown to make sure and kind of let less of those things slip through the cracks than you would have seen 50 years ago. So I trust in the process, and I trust in the process because I have to, in order to make sure that things continue to do and work the way they're supposed to work. This gentleman in Minneapolis that's accused of this horrendous crime, he'll have his opportunity to have his day in court, and the state will have their opportunity to have their day in court. And then he'll be judged by his peers, And as a result of that, he'll either spend time in prison or won't.
But as we said,
that's the process.
The process is still there. It's much harder, and I think everybody would agree, it's much harder to be a law enforcement officer now than it was 20 or 30 years ago. And that's one of the things, because of the individual, the responsibilities that you have and the duties that you have and the fact that you have less respect. You get less respect, typically, from a lot of people.
And they have more of a workload than ever before.
Yeah.
You know how it is when you're overwhelmed, when you're doing your job and you're doing somebody else's job and you got three things going at once. So I do believe that they've been overwhelmed at times with things that maybe they're not the solution to that problem. Like I said, with the mental health issues, they do encounter a lot of people when they're having a bad day. So you said a traffic stop is scary. You don't know what kind of day that person's having.
Yeah.
You don't know if they're good or bad or indifferent. And they come up to that door and have you roll the window down and they don't know what to expect. And when they answer these calls, it's the same thing. I would tell people that if you're not in any kind of – if you can be cooperative, things are going to be a lot easier, especially if you were just speeding. Okay, well, just take your speeding ticket and go home. Don't argue. Don't fight. I mean, you can challenge it in court. There is a process, like Matt said. If you want to challenge the process, challenge it. But don't have a one-on-one interaction with a police officer that's going to make them worry that you're going to try to do something that they're scared too.
Right.
At times I'm sure they are. So I would say, treat each other with respect and you'll get a little farther.
I think, just from my perspective, there's a level of classic conditioning that takes place for people who work in those roles over a series of years. And I like to use the example, when I was deployed to Iraq, I had a lot of friends when we were there, that their personality changes, and their personality changes because every day we're presented with conflict and we're presented with situations where we have to make sure that we are in control of that situation at all time. Otherwise, really bad things can happen. So when they come back, levels of empathy and things like that, they're not there. And their families saw that, and over years, it took years after coming back from many of those deployments for a lot of those guys to adjust. And we hear about horror stories all the time about that not taking place. We'd be remiss if we didn't consider our law enforcement officers to be in that same pool.
Yeah, I would say so.
But they don't get the relief. They don't get an 18-month tour and then get to take 2 years off and try and regroup and then go back and do it again. A lot of these guys will do it for 10, 20, 30, 40 years.
And they have to and maintain. They got to maintain that discipline, and they got to maintain that demeanor
Very high level of expectation for those people. And again, that doesn't mean that there aren't people that shouldn't be in the profession. It just means that it's a different situation. It's something that a lot of people can't relate to. It's something that I think over the next couple of years is going to be a lot of dialogue from a lot of people who have a lot of great information. And I think as society works through it, we'll figure out how to make it acceptable and make sure that we don't have areas of our population that are being singled out. And to make sure that everybody is treated fairly.
We also have to protect
those people who we expect to protect us.
Well, we also had Jason Marlowe of the Iowa State Patrol. I asked him, I said, how much of the reaction or how much of the demonstrations, how much of the violence that came out of those, how much of that is connected to the fact we've had a virtual lockdown and still a lockdown in a lot of places, and to have more people, as I said, the pressurized lockdown itself has had some negative effects overall on people in terms of needing to be to get out. I'm saying is if you're already one of those people who is sort of on the edge, that's going to put you right on, mm-hmm. right over that edge.
Right.
We're going to take a break. We've got some more final words from our city council members right after this.
Sessions last. Time to call Sherwood Company.
The weather is warming, and soon you'll be able to enjoy your home's outdoor living spaces. An awning from the Sherwood Company can help you enjoy those areas even more. Outdoor awnings expand the living area of your home, giving you more entertaining space that is protected from rain and the blazing sun. Ideal for decks and patios, they are easy to operate and retract or extend in minutes, allowing sun when you want it and shade when you need it. Sherwood Company builds awnings that are both fashionable and functional. Offered in over 1,000 different combinations of colors and styles, outdoor awnings provide indoor benefits too. They protect your furniture, drapes, and carpeting from fading due to the infrared rays of the sun. Awnings from the Sherwood Company are custom designed for your space and come with a 10-year warranty. Call the Sherwood Company for more information today.
First impressions last. Time to call Sherwood Company.
As corona restrictions are slowly being lifted, it's time to start getting back to normal responsibly. Fact is, Greater Burlington local businesses are hurting. While you were stuck at home, they were told to close up shop. Now that stores are able to open, they are eager to welcome you back with open arms from a safe 6 feet away. Stop into one of our amazing restaurants and enjoy a delicious lunch or dinner. Visit your favorite shop and treat yourself to something special. Or call a service professional to do that job you've been waiting to get done. You can help stimulate the Greater Burlington economy. Get the items you need every day and still practice social distancing. Local businesses understand this is the new normal. They want you to feel comfortable while you shop. Be on the lookout for the orange open for business signs around town. These signs show you members that are open and working hard to keep their business clean and ready for you to shop. Brought to you by the members of the Chamber of Commerce, a division of the Greater Burlington Partnership, making connections, building community.
Free Talk Live.
At one time was the greatest plot of land on the entire earth. I don't know if we can make that claim anymore.
But the evidence is that it cannot claim to be the economically freest country in earth. All you have to do is look at the Conservative Heritage Foundation's numbers. And you can go to freetheworld.com, look there too. The fact is, United States, not the freest country in the world. Sorry.
Free Talk Live, weeknights from 11 till midnight on News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR.
And welcome back on the talk show today. We've got Matt Rinker. We've got Robert Kreitzer joining us today. Colin Letty is again news director. He's across the console from me. And we're down to the pretty much, I think, really, you've got a council meeting that's coming up on Monday. And I don't guess the question is, what do you know what's going to be on the agenda? Do you know what you have to be dealing with? What sort of things are going to be
there? We usually get a packet ahead of time, so we read through it on the weekend.
And work then, session. We had the work session last Monday. So
everything that was on the work session
will be on the council meeting packet.
Okay.
So the work sessions, for a lot of people who don't attend council meetings and don't watch them online, this is how this works. So work sessions are essentially a run-through of everything we're going to talk about or everything that we're going to see on the council meeting packet. But we typically will talk about it and go more into the weeds and details on issues during the work session. It's also an opportunity for people to come and give
presentations,
longer presentations to the council to bring up new ideas or new issues. But again, in a work session, the public doesn't typically have an opportunity to comment. But if there's people there who are there for a specific issue that's on the work session agenda, then we'll allow them to address that.
Are people able to go to the council meeting?
They can call in. Yes. So they get on the phone line and then John will say, "Hey, this is Mayor Billups, who we got on the line. Tell us what you're."
Okay.
And then, so they'll give him a number like 1 through 10. Hey, caller number 10, you had this issue. Did you want to speak on that? To avoid repetition, if somebody else already voiced their opinion, it's the same. They can say, well, it was just the same thing the other guy brought up. But part of that work session is so that you can figure out what questions you want to ask the next Monday. Or if you have an issue, you can bring it up then. So
Anybody can see the agenda or the work session packet. All you have to do is go to burlingtoniowa.org. Click on the little button in the upper left, and then click on meeting videos, agendas, and minutes.
Okay.
And then on there, Kathleen Salisbury does a great job every week of updating and uploading the packet for the following week. So everybody can see exactly what we have the opportunity to see prior to the meeting. And a lot of people do that. I know you guys have news here locally, and I'm sure that they do that here. But just so that everyone knows that that information is available, and we welcome input.
Absolutely. We read all your emails.
In terms of any change between the telephone and live people, is there any plans to do that or to bring that back?
We'll see some of those things change here over the next 30 days. But again, it'll be dependent on what's going on with everything as far as
The governor says
from the state. Yep.
What the governor or whatever the governor says or whatever. Anyway,
right.
Robert Kreitzer, Matt Rinker, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks.
A tradition of news, sports, and public affairs excellence continues. News Radio 99.3 and 1490 KBUR, Burlington.